podcast that will help us understand our health better. I'll talk to experts who will demystify topics like stress, fertility, nutrition, and much more as we take steps to become the healthiest version of ourselves. Since being diagnosed with cancer in my 30s, I made it my priority to educate myself on my health. I discovered creating healthy habits and investing in yourself can lead to wonderful things. I'm so proud to say that this podcast is sponsored by ReproMed. ReproMed understands how daunting it can be to navigate your fertility journey, so it's their mission to put their patients at the center of everything they do. Their world-class team of specialists offer the expertise, empathy, and compassionate care needed to relieve your concerns and guide your decisions. With clinics in Galway, Dublin, Drogheda, and Kilkenny, they are never far away and will do all they can to help you start your family. Check out repromed.ie for more. Hello, I hope you are well today. I am so excited to bring this podcast to you today. So on this season of The Good Glow Health, I really wanted to cover the topic of daily wellness. So I wanted to talk about things like exercise, supplements, what we can do on a daily basis to keep ourselves well. I am joined today by the amazing Laura Dowling. I'm sure lots of you know who she is. She is also known as the Fabulous Pharmacist on Instagram, and she's well known for being open and honest, especially around the topic of women's health, which she is passionate about. And I'm so thrilled to be joined by Laura today. This was such an amazing season of The Good Glow Health. I learned so much on the topics of fertility, menopause, intuitive health, the list is endless. So I just wanted to say a big, massive thank you to all of my guests for joining me this season. And I do hope you enjoy this episode. I'll talk to you very soon. Laura, thank you so much for your time today. I'm so excited for this conversation. How are you?
I'm very well, actually. It's a nice day today and it's lovely to get out and see you. And I think it's great to be in studio doing this too.
And you've had your first vaccine, first AstraZeneca. How did you feel after it?
I felt awful after it, actually. And I'm never sick. I was one of the ones that reacted quite badly just with the symptoms. So just I was really flu-like. I was shivering in the middle of the night after having it. And then I was fine, just a little bit fatigued a couple of days afterwards. So as a result then, my mum was really scared about going and getting it because she was getting the AstraZeneca too. She's under 70 and she went through it like a breeze. So I think it just depends on the person.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think there's a lot of anxiety with the over 60s with the AstraZeneca?
I think there's anxiety. Yeah, there is. Because of all the headlines about the very rare blood clot that, you know, it is so rare, but it's understandable that people would be worried about it. Absolutely, I can understand. But the thing that people have to realise is there are side effects with every medicine. Every single medicine that you take comes with a patient information leaflet that has numerous side effects because everything has to be listed. And even things that happen in a clinical trial that may or may not be attributed to the medicine, if it happens during that trial, it's put into the patient information leaflet. So, you know, people might read them and be very, very scared. But in actual fact, something like the AstraZeneca blood clot happens so rarely that, you know, people have to kind of be mindful of that.
And you're a frontline health worker. You've been going to work over the past year. You work in Lloyd's and Stillorgan. So did you ever imagine that you'd be working through a global pandemic? Did you? You obviously were completely as shocked as the next person that this happened.
Absolutely. I've worked, so I'm a pharmacist. I've been a qualified pharmacist for 18 years and I've worked in Lloyd's Stillorgan for 16 of those
years. Have you? Wow.
It's seen me through the birth of my three boys and everything. And I just live up the road. So it's really handy for me, you know, and I know everyone in there. It's like a little sense of community. So it was very, very strange for us because obviously when everything shut down, not only were we trying to navigate our way through, you know, delivering medicines to people because obviously people were in their homes. Everything was done on the phones. The phone never stopped ringing. And then obviously we had people very worried coming into us as well. And then we had people that were, you know, the pharmacy may have been the only place that they'd talked to people in a month. Yes. Whenever they were coming to pick up their medicines, and they didn't have that anymore. So I tried to phone some of those elderly patients of mine that were, you know, I knew would have been lonely and by themselves. So, yeah, it was tough. And then also we missed the sense of community in Stillorgan as well. So all the shops around us closed down. Like, you know, they're our friends. We see them every day. They pop into the pharmacy every day. We pop into their shops too. So it was a lonely existence with the two pharmacies in Stillorgan open and Tesco, you know. Yeah. So, and the off licence, of course, which is across the way, which had a permanent queue for the entire 12 months.
And do you think people now, in 2021, are becoming more aware of their health? And I suppose bringing in a holistic approach as well as medicine. Obviously, I'm a big fan of medicine. It saved my life. I've had the chemo. I've, you know, gone into the pharmacy and left with a full bag packed full of medicine around that time. So I absolutely believe in it. But do you think that people are becoming more aware of their of holistic health at the same time?
I absolutely do. And I am a pharmacist. And of course, I'm trained in medicines and trained in healthcare and how to treat illness with medicines. But I'm very much for the holistic side of life. And I think that medicine certainly has its place. But a lot of the time, medicine doesn't need to be given. Like, say, for instance, if someone comes in with a sore back and they're hitting the painkillers, oftentimes if they did some stretching or exercise or maybe applied a heat pack or something like that, they could avoid the medicine in that sense. So sometimes I think that we do definitely need the more holistic approach. And I think that it is forthcoming. There are a lot of people that are going down that route too. But in combination with medicine, it's important that one doesn't replace the other, that we're seen as our whole body. So we may be treating an illness, but also we have to be very mindful of our mental health. So, you know, I know you've been through cancer. So, you know, your chemo hit the cancer that was growing inside you. However, you know, you needed to look after your mental health too. And you can only do that by talking, by counselling, by being really mindful of everything else that's going on in your body, as well as breathing and exercise. So I'm all for that kind of side of life. Like that's the way I roll.
And in terms of like daily wellness, what sort of things can we do on a daily basis to keep ourselves well? Like, does that vary in winter? Does that look differently in winter than it would in summer? Or what's your approach to it?
I think so. Well, I know certainly myself. So I practice yoga. I practice Ashtanga yoga. I also love swimming and running. And I'm very much an exercise type person. I grew up with a mum that exercised all the time. So I grew up thinking that exercise was a good thing to do. And I know myself, if I haven't exercised for a couple of days, be it run, swim, yoga or something, I get quite ratty. And, you know, I can feel my mood dropping because I do get that sense of endorphins from it. But I do find in the wintertime I'm that a little bit more sluggish. So I'm not getting up for a run in the morning time when it's dark, because obviously, you know, I'm a bit scared of running in the dark anyway. Now, I do have a dog and I was running with him this winter, and that made me feel a bit safer in the early mornings or in the late evenings. So that was fine. But certainly when the brighter mornings come along, I'm definitely more up and out there and get up and do my yoga at 6 in the morning. Whereas during the wintertime, I don't. And I miss that. And I have let my yoga go over the last few months. I'm just slowly getting back into it now. And I'm feeling so much better as a result. My shoulders were all tense and tight there for a while. And I've just, like, the last few weeks I've started doing my yoga again. I just feel so much better. So I think that, like everything in life, you know, our fitness and our wellness, you know, it's like waves that comes in peaks and troughs. And we may be on our game and really fit and feeling amazing for, like, you know, maybe only a few weeks out of the year. And then the rest of the year we're just moseying along. But I think so long as you're doing something that makes your soul feel good and makes you happy, then that's really important. And I think that women especially, we tend to put a lot of other people first before us. We, you know, we put our children first, or our friends first, or our older parents first, or our partner first. And oftentimes we're much better people, and I'm certainly a much nicer wife, and I'm certainly a much better mother when I've done my exercise. So I will leave the kitchen like an absolute tip, and I will go out for my run.
Yes.
And I'll come back to it. It might be a tip still, or the boys may have helped. I have three little boys. They may have tidied, and my husband can well direct them as well. But I'm much happier. And I do see it that, look, the kitchen will still be there. It's a functioning kitchen. They eat several times a day. It's not just three meals a day. So it's always messy. So what's the point in, you know, spending my energy tidying it and being too tired to go for a run for myself when that half an hour that I give myself is beneficial to everyone in the house.
Yeah. But don't people often have to get to a crisis point to realize that? For me, it certainly was. I would have much preferred a clean house than have gone out to do something for myself. But I suppose when I got to crisis point, I felt like things had to change. So I suppose for people listening who haven't got to a crisis in their life, like, how do you motivate yourself to get out, or how do you motivate yourself to step away from the ironing and do something for yourself?
So, full disclaimer, I am a very bad housewife, okay? I love cooking, but I'm not very good at cleaning or tidying. But I'll do it to keep my house going. Obviously, I don't have a dirty house. It's just, it's not my priority. It never has been. So exercise has always been my priority. And obviously next to, you know, my children being fed and their homework being done and them being happy, etc. But I think that if someone just goes for that run and gets that buzz as to how they feel after having it, and they remember that, you know, when the ironing is there piling up, they'll just go, oh, look, you know, that's not going to give me the... Now, some people do get a buzz out of housework, you know, and that's great. And I work with a girl who just loves cleaning, and that's her, you know, that's her meditation.
Yeah.
And if that is, that's great. So long as you're building up a pulse rate and, you know, it is actually exercise, because they were saying, actually, I was reading something, and apparently, you know, women nowadays, and it's only, I say it's women, it sounds very sexist, but obviously back in the 1950s, it was mainly women that were doing the housework. They don't do as much housework now or something, or they don't do as much frenetic housework, so they're not, and if they're not doing that and then they're not exercising either, it's not good for their health. Whereas if they're running around the house with a Hoover all day and you know, cleaning frantically, then that's exercise too. So I suppose it's whatever you can get, and as I said before, it's what makes your soul happy. But I would definitely say step away from it, it'll still be there when you get back.
Yeah, because I remember my oncologist said to me, you know, Georgie, you need to exercise. But I'm not talking about bringing the dog for a walk around the block. It needs to be heart beating in your chest exercise. And it never left me when she said that. I've never forgotten it. So it is about getting your heart rate up, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. When you consider it, your heart is a muscle and it needs to work. It needs to work out to stay healthy, like all our muscles. So if you're lying in bed all day or sitting on the couch all day, your muscles aren't working. They're atrophying. They're not getting strong, they're not supple. It's the same with your heart. You need your heart to race, to work properly and to work well. And obviously it's pumping oxygen through your body, but it's also, and what I always focus on, is the endorphins that are released when you exercise are just so good for your brain. And I genuinely think that, you know, we'd be much happier if we just gave ourselves that little bit of time. It doesn't have to be very much. Like, sometimes I'll just squeeze 20 minutes in of weights or something just before work at 12 on a Sunday. You know, I've dropped some of the kids to their matches or something, brought them home. I've 20 minutes to spare, so I'll just do it. And, you know, I just feel so much better doing it. So
yeah. Such good advice. I don't know how many times I've gone into a pharmacy and stood at the supplements wall for 10 minutes and then just kind of given up and walked away because it's so overwhelming.
Yeah.
Do you find that there's a lot of confusion around supplements?
I do. And there's a lot of misleading, I suppose, advertisements around supplements too. And I think that people have to be very aware of the fact that, you know, if you're eating a balanced and healthy diet and you're getting your exercise and you're getting your sleep every day, you tend to not really need very much more than your vitamin D. Because we're all deficient in vitamin D here in Ireland, apparently, because of our, you know, our distance from the equator, etc., and our lack of sunlight. Obviously, folic acid if you're a childbearing woman, and really important if you're a childbearing woman to take your folic acid every day, even if you're not planning to get pregnant, because half of all pregnancies are a little accident or they're not planned.
Surprise!
So that's really important. So yeah, the supplement aisle can be very, you know, very overwhelming, and I would just always recommend people to ask, you know, the pharmacist in the pharmacy, or ask the healthcare assistant for a little bit of advice on that, because, you know, oftentimes unless you actually go for blood tests and find out what you're deficient in, you don't really know, and you might be peeing a lot of it away, you know.
Yes, it is really important, isn't it, to kind of go and see what you're deficient in, and that's through a blood test with your GP,
Yeah, your GP can give you a blood test. Now, I do like fish oils, or, you know, omega oils. They can be very good for your heart health. health, your skin health, your brain. So they're always something. If somebody wants to take that little extra to plug a little gap, that can be good as well. And then often women, when they're coming into kind of menopausal, they might need some extra magnesium, some extra, you know, they can get some soy isoflavones just to plug little gaps in their diet that might help them kind of overcome some kind of symptoms. So that's important too. So, you know, just discuss it with someone. Don't just go and pick the most expensive pack on the shelf, mm-hmm. because oftentimes you may not need everything that's in it.
Yeah, such good advice. And when it comes to kids and hay fever, obviously you hate to see the little ones suffer, but what should they be taking?
So you can use little nasal sprays that just form a little foam. So they come, you shake them, they I think it's called Beck allergy or something like that, but you shake them, they're a foam that you shake, you spray it up the nose and it forms like a gel around in the nostril, which just prevents any allergens going up into the nose, or if they do go up into the nose, it just catches them before it comes in contact with the nasal mucosa, which is causing the allergic response. So it just blocks that response. And then you can also use little eye drops as well for them. And you know, it's amazing what a little eye water spray could do. So you know, like, you know, the thermal water sprays, like Avène do them, La Roche-Posay do them, Vichy have them too. And if you just like go around with them, spraying them in your eyes as well, they can like cleanse out and wash out the allergens too. So there's a lot of things that you can take as well that aren't necessarily medication that can really help to ease hay fever symptoms. And those water sprays are sterile until they're used up, because they're bottled directly at source. So
yeah,
they're always a good one to have. And you can spray it down your chest as well if you're getting hot flushes.
Oh God.
I often sell them to women that are going through the menopause and they might be experiencing hot flashes. It's good to whip it out and just spray it.
Yeah,
spray it
Jesus,
over yourself.
I just did a podcast on menopause actually, and the symptoms can be like horrific.
Oh, they can be. God, that's like a whole podcast. That's a whole podcast week, Georgie. Yeah. I could talk to you forever about the menopause. I'm a massive advocate for, you know, giving women information about that and having them seek advice for that, because there are many symptoms that women experience that they can really be eased by medication and by lifestyle, etc. So that might be one for another day.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of people, and it brings us actually nicely to the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, which is just putting up with things and suffering in silence. And, you know, maybe it's a little bit of embarrassment. Maybe you don't want to acknowledge that certain things are happening to you, but there's a lot, isn't there, that people put up with. I'll get back to that conversation in just a sec. With everything going on in my life at the moment, I'm honoured to team up with ReproMed this season. I've learned more about ReproMed and what they do over the past couple of years. They pride themselves in taking a personal interest in your care, regardless of where you are on your fertility journey. ReproMed.ie is packed full of information on TSI, IUI, IVF, egg donation, fertility preservation, and more. A consultation with their team, which you can book on ReproMed.ie, will provide you with everything you need to know about treatment options in a supportive, honest environment. Now, back to my conversation.
There is, yes, and some people are embarrassed about, you know, even just, you know, simple things, like they might be embarrassed, they might have a rash in their bum, or they might be embarrassed that they'd have a fungal infection under their breast. It can look unsightly, but a little antifungal cream can really help that out. So it's really important that people know that they can come into the pharmacy and ask the pharmacist for advice, and we're happy to be there. Like any peer I have, like, we're only too happy to talk to patients. Like, I hate being in the dispensary packaging up medicines. It's the patients and the customers that I love talking to. So yeah, it's important that people know that. But even so far as people being on antidepressants, like, I will often get someone who's just been first prescribed an antidepressant. So first of all, they've gone into the doctor, their doctor's, you know, given them the advice. You know that you take away about like 10% of what someone tells you the first time around anyway. Mm. So they come into me and they're like, oh, how long do I have to be on this? So the embarrassment and the shame is already there about being on it, and they haven't even started it. And, you know, I like to say to them, look, the important thing is that this makes you feel better. So if you're on it and you get to a place where you're feeling, you know, yourself again, then you stay on it for another 6 months to make sure that you're feeling well again. And then you reduce gradually off it with your doctor's consent. And you know, you don't just go boom one day, I'm coming coming off it, because you can get like rebound anxiety and that. So it's really important that you do discuss this, and that, so someone that is on an antidepressant, they may be on it for a good year before they could even consider coming off it. And that's only if they start to feel better on it. But like oftentimes people are on antidepressants for years and years, if not for the rest of their lives. And that's not a problem. I'm sure if people went, and I will often say this to people too, if you go out for dinner with your friends, with a group of 10 friends, you can guaranteed, you know, at least half of them will have been on something or have had some kind of a depressive issue or anxiety issue in their lifetime, and they could put their hands up and, you know, help you with it. So I think it's more important that we talk about it, just like the menopause. Women talk about their symptoms, talk about their problems. It's not something that should be, we should shy away from, you know, especially things like low libido and vaginal dryness and that is something that women just, you know, don't discuss. It's almost like they just put up with it. They put up with the panic attacks and the feeling of low mood and the fatigue. And they shouldn't. They should be talking. They should be asking questions, seeking advice. And if they're not getting the answers that they want or the help that they need from the current GP, then look for another one. Ask around. Word of mouth gets around. There's loads of doctors out there that are willing to help, you know.
And as well, like, and we were talking about this on my podcast that I did on menopause about vaginal dryness and how it's so awkward, and you're not going to go for a coffee with your friend to discuss it, but that you can go in to a pharmacy and ask for a word with the pharmacist. Like, is that okay to do
100%.
That?
We have care rooms that we can bring people into a private consultation with, and absolutely. Like, I love, women may be a little bit awkward if they're speaking to a male pharmacist about something like that. But, you know, a lot of us are really open to talking about something, and we are there to help. And there are things that women can use that are just available over the counter to help with vaginal dryness. There are vaginal moisturizers. There are also lubricants to have during when they're having sex to make sex less painful or and more enjoyable. And then also there would be pessaries that they can use, but ultimately they may need an estrogen pessary, and that's just the form of a little tablet. And those little estrogen pessaries, some people think, oh God, I can't take estrogen, you know, it's HRT, it's dangerous for me, especially if they've had breast cancer. But in actual fact, those little pessaries, taking them the way they're prescribed, so you're supposed to take them for 14 days in a row and then twice a week thereafter, like a year of that therapy is like taking one HRT tablet. That's how much gets into the bloodstream.
Right.
Yeah. So it's very, very little, if any. It's just working on the vaginal mucosa to help protect its integrity and build it back up again. Because, you know, the vulva changes as women go through the menopause. And it can be sore for women to walk even, sore for them to ride a bike, you know, sore for them, definitely sore to wipe even. So, and that is awful that women are going through that and they're suffering in silence. I had a 70-year-old come into me with her first prescription for vaginal pessary, you know, and she had been suffering for years before she went to a doctor. And they can get recurrent UTIs as well, so urinary tract infections, or it seems like urinary tract infection, but in actual fact, it's just the genital urinary syndrome of the menopause, which is basically where the vulva and vagina changes because of all the estrogen depletion. The estrogen completely depletes, and your anatomy changes down there. Like if you took a mirror down there and looked there, like post menopause compared to pre menopause, it would look different. You know, it's naturally does that, and oftentimes an estrogen cream can help that just down there. So I would often have a chat with some of the ladies that are maybe coming in with UTIs, say, listen, maybe talk to your doctor about, you know, prescribing an estrogen cream. And that can often be, you know, life changing for them and amazing. But it's just, we need to be talking about it.
I didn't even know they existed.
Yeah, and, you know, vaginas aren't a bad thing to talk about. It's really important. Like, I mean, 51% of the population have them. And we are all, if we're lucky enough to reach the age of menopause, we're all going to go through it. So why not make it open and honest, you know, and have this like ongoing conversation about it? Really,
and I
important.
Have to say, that's what I love about your page. You're so open and honest, and it's a great, fabulous pharmacist on Instagram if anyone wants to follow you. And, you know, you speak so openly and honestly. Can I talk to you a little bit about kind of the signs of cancer, and are we facing a crisis over the next couple of years of people maybe not going to their screening appointments or not ringing their GP about something they may be suffering with?
Yeah, so that is a little bit concerning. So COVID has obviously put everything on the back burner, and there's been people that have been avoiding going to the doctor with symptoms of cancer. So I also know recently that like a colleague of mine went to the GP to get, and she just, you know, she had asked her, oh, have you had your mammogram lately? And the GP actually said, oh, actually, you were supposed to get it 9 months ago, but actually there's a 9-month waiting list now because of COVID. So Georgie, you know that how desperate it is when, you know, if you do experience a lump or if you haven't been, you know, checked out. So I think that it's important that obviously the most important thing is that we get everything back up and running again post-COVID, that people are checking themselves, they are checking their breasts every month. You get to know your breasts, you get to know how they feel. Some people have cystic breasts, some people don't have cystic breasts. But, you know, there, look at a video that actually shows you how to properly check your breasts. Important. It's not just like have a little feeling, oh God, I'm grand. Like get to know what your breasts look like in the mirror, if there's any puckering, how they hang, you know, and our breasts changes throughout the month so they can get bigger and smaller and, you know, throughout our monthly cycle too. So that's really important. Like I had an elderly gentleman come in to me there a couple of weeks ago and he had a growth on his forehead and it was the size of a 50 cent coin. And he said it had been there for a year. And he asked me, can I have something for this? I've been putting Sudocream on it. Now I said to him, you need to go to the doctor with that. But people are putting off going to the doctor. And it's actually a little bit frightening. I don't want to frighten people out there, but I do want to say to you that if you do see something on your body that wasn't there before, don't put off getting seen to. Doctors are open. They're open for business. They're open to look at you. They can either do it via tele conferencing or they can do it in person. They have all the PPE. Their surgeries are clean and spanking. You know, a lot of us have been vaccinated now as well. So don't delay going to get seen. I just and then obviously your doctor can hoosh you through if they're particularly worried about you, you know.
That's a message Breast Cancer Ireland have been trying to get out over the last year, is that if there, you do have a sign of breast cancer, it's not just a lump, that ring your GP, you will be referred to a breast clinic and you will be checked out. And I actually, it's so hard sometimes for me to even like touch myself. I think because I found my lump by accident, like my hand fell against my chest.
Okay.
Sometimes I can't bear to, because I'm so afraid.
Yeah.
What if that happens again?
I know.
You know, and I think it's just so important for people to know that early detection saves lives, and you just take a deep breath and check your breasts because you could save your own life.
No, you absolutely can. So I had a scare as well. So last March, I found a lump on my breast, and I'd gone to the doctor about it and I was referred to the breast clinic, but with the whole COVID thing, I wasn't seen until September and I had to have a biopsy and everything. Now it was all clear. But that biopsy, I'll never forget it. Now the doctors are so lovely down there. Like they're just, you know, they talk to you like as if you're a little child, because I think that you feel like a little child down there. But I'll never forget coming home to my husband after it, and I was just like burst out crying. It was just like overwhelming that I actually got it seen to. So even though I'm quite a, you know, I'm always a glass half full type of person, it was obviously playing in my mind. And I remember my mum saying to me, like in the weeks preceding me getting the biopsy, I didn't tell anyone because I just don't like a fuss being made, and I didn't want to worry my mum either, because she had breast cancer and she'd had to have a mastectomy and reconstruction, and I just didn't want her being worried because I know that would have been playing in her mind. So, and I remember saying to her, are you all right? You're just not yourself. I was probably maybe just a little bit down, or maybe a little bit ratty, maybe, you know. But anyway, the results come back all clear and that was fine. But it's just so important that people get checked, and the doctors are there to help you. And you know, if you do find a lump or something, you will be referred and hopefully be seen too soon.
Yeah.
You know?
And as hard as it is to stare at your naked body in the mirror sometimes, do it. Like I look at my breasts all the time in the mirror, because I think when you get to know your body, then you'll notice if something is different.
Yeah, you will. And even on that, like as hard as it is to look at your body naked, why is it hard for women to look at their bodies naked? You know, I often wonder, we're all, you know, made to be different. We're all these different personalities. Some are big, some are small, some have like lopsided boobs, some have like lopsided arses, you know. But our bodies are amazing. Our bodies are there to keep us alive. And they're so multifunctional. Like think about what your body is doing now, where we're just sitting here, you know, you're breathing, you don't even realize that your heart is beating. It's, you know, your digestive system's probably like, you know, digesting the breakfast that you had. And I just don't understand why women in particular have this hang up about their body that is beautiful, and that like our partners don't really care what our body looks like. Like, our, you know, they generally don't gay, straight, whatever you are, like, you know, your body is there to be enjoyed and to for you to enjoy too. And I would love for women in particular to kind of appreciate their bodies more. And that's why I set up the page Fabulous Pharmacist. It's not because I think I'm fabulous. It's more that I wanted to kind of spread fabulousness with kind of my message about, you know, like, it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter. And just do what you do to make yourself happy and kind of, I would love for more women to be more, enjoy their bodies more for what they are and appreciate them for what they are, rather than it being this physical thing that we all have to attain because, you know, we see all these pictures on Instagram of these perfectly airbrushed people, let's admit, you know. And
it's even like after my breast surgery, like my right breast, just where my lump was.
Yeah.
And I had two lumpectomies. So it's I have a wonky boob.
Yeah.
And anytime I look at photos, I'm so self-conscious of it. But I suppose during lockdown, like, I haven't been out, I haven't worn a bra in a year, you know. Yeah. And I'm
oh,
like,
the freedom of not wearing a bra. It's fantastic.
But now I'm like, God, like, I hope when I get back out there that I will wear a low cut top and not have to feel self-conscious because my boobs aren't the way they used to be.
But your boobs have gone through so much, and aren't they fantastic? Mm. And what are boobs? They are, well, I know that they're a sexual, you know, a sexual thing. Obviously, I love nothing more than looking at a good pair of boobs myself. However, they feed our babies if you so choose to breastfeed. And, you know, they're the giver of life. And your boobs aren't going to be the same after you breastfeed or have babies. You know, that's the reality. But, you know, we can't all look like we did when we were 16. If we did look like that when we were 16. Yeah. You know, Georgie, I have a wonky boob too, and I didn't even have a lumpectomy. So I think that it's really important that we just embrace our differences as women and, like, just love ourselves, you know, that way. It's really important.
No, it's a great message. I just wanted to talk about radiotherapy just really quickly, because I feel like for people going through cancer treatment, when you're prescribed chemotherapy, for example, everyone rows in around you. Mm-hmm. And certainly when I got through chemo, I was like, okay, that's grand. I just have radiotherapy now. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Started radiotherapy. Oh my God. Like, it hit me like a train.
It's brutal, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I feel like people who are diagnosed with cancer and are just given radiotherapy, that people don't really understand what they're going through in that time. It's so tough.
It is. It's tough. It's sore. It's painful. And then it's the traipsing in and out to the hospital every day as well, that, you know, you have to remember that people are doing, and, you know, that time out of their day, that time out of their life, that time out of their week. And then it's also the mental side of it though too, isn't it? So, you know, we go through the physical side, and I often find with cancer patients, once they've been through their chemotherapy or radiotherapy, everyone's like, okay, great, so you're great now.
Back to normal.
Back to normal, you're great, you know, you're cancer free. But you went through so much, you had these life-changing events, you were thinking, I could die. That's a huge mental toll. And I think the cancer nurses are brilliant, and the counselling services that are available. But I would say to people, if they are going through any kind of cancer therapy and radiotherapy, like you've just said, is to talk to people and tell people how you're feeling. Like, you can't keep it all bottled up inside. It's so, so important that you acknowledge how you're feeling, because that sometimes is the first step. You know, the way if you're feeling awful and you just say it to someone, almost it's like a weight lifted off your shoulder. So if you're feeling awful from radio and no one knows, then no one's going to be able to comfort you. And like I said, when I went for my biopsy and I felt like a little girl, like, it was lovely to feel mothered. That's often how we need to feel when we are sick or we're unwell. We need to feel mothered. Like, I know myself, when on the rare occasion I am sick, I just want my mum. I don't want anyone else, because, you know, and I think that is really important. So talk to people, talk to your partner, talk to your friends, tell everyone how you're feeling, and you'll feel so much better. And you don't know what anyone else is going through. If you open up that conversation, someone else may be feeling unwell or unhappy, and that might make them go, oh, well, look, you know, like, they're feeling unwell too and unhappy, and, you know, I'll share my burden. And sometimes that can just be the open conversation that people need to make themselves feel better.
Yeah, exactly. And also, one of the best tips that I ever got for radiotherapy was E45 cream.
Yeah.
Like, no fancy creams, E45, you can get it in the pharmacy.
Yeah,
it's a miracle worker.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's just important that I know people often like to buy people that are going through cancer all kinds of fancy things, mm-hmm. but oftentimes they can't, their skin just can't take that. They need really, really mild, unfragranced, just straight to it creams, just to moisturize their dryness, moisturize the pain away almost, you know, that way. And yeah, so just double check with the pharmacist what someone can use if they are going through chemo and radio, because yeah. And then oftentimes I'd find people that are going through cancer as well, they just want the least amount of chemicals on their body, because they're taking so much mm-hmm. inside, they're just like, I just want all organic, I just want all, you know, really mild, really, you know. And that's really important too, to be mindful of what they want to maybe ask them.
Yeah. And so what do you think the summer is going to look like? Obviously the vaccines are ramping up. Mm-hmm. It feels like I've been talking to more and more people who are getting their vaccines. Do you think there's a bit of hope in the air?
I do. I really do. I think it's lovely to see. And it's almost like, I know the vaccines, it seems like the vaccine rollout was very slow and we were all screaming for it and like, why are we so slow and everything, but now it seems like, oh my god, it's kind of going quite fast. There's almost an anxiety around, like, what's going to happen when we're, most of us are vaccinated, you know. I hope the summer is nice. I hope that we have some nice days, some nice weather. I don't think any of us are going to be going away. We'll have like loads of staycations, lots of maybe family barbecues, kind of reconnect with people that we've missed for the last year and a half. And I suppose the important thing is to be kind to each other, isn't it? Because we're all coming out of this kind of a little bit anxious, I think. You know, I think we'll still take a long time to kind of settle ourselves back into the swing of things. Certainly young children and teenagers and those children that missed their Leaving Cert last year and went straight into college and have been on Zoom and got, you know, I can't imagine that. Like when I was in first year college in Trinity, I was having
free
the
as a bird.
Time of my life. And the thought of having to do all those lectures and labs over online and not meeting my fellow students. You know, I also tutor a student pharmacist and I had one this year, and you know, she'd never met any of her classmates. So it's just so strange. So I think being really mindful of those young people as well, and then our elderly, and then I think we just have to be mindful of everyone, don't we? And just be really kind to each other and kind of just accept that maybe some of us have come out a little bit more bruised than others. Like I feel lucky. I know people say, oh, you're a frontline healthcare worker, you've been working throughout this pandemic, but I've been really lucky that I can get up and get dressed and go to work. There's a lot of people that haven't been able to, you know.
And do you think that there is going to be initiatives in place to kind of help people with their mental health over the next while?
I think that it would be a real disservice if there wasn't. There actually needs to be. The amount of people that have come in to me and said, you're the first person I've talked to in a month or in 2 months. And maybe I've had people, several people, like, you know, burst out crying because they haven't seen anyone or no one's asked them how they are in so long. They don't even know how to respond. And like, I'm a hugger, like I really am. So I will often hug people and I haven't been able to hug anyone in, you know, a year and a half. So it's been, or by the time the summer will come, I won't have been able to. So that's different. And often, like, you know, human touch can be so comforting. It really can. So that's why, you know, the benefits of massage and the benefits of hugs, and we're really tactile as mammals. That's what we are, you know. So I think that we need that, don't we?
Yeah. We can't just be expected to get back out there.
No, I don't think so. And we need to almost relearn how to deal with each other, because I would even find you're almost walking past someone in a shop and, you know, you will have people that cover their hands, even though they're wearing the mask, when you walk by them, or they turn around, they kind of do a little spin when you're walking past them, you know, turn around the other way and walk backwards. And that is just, I know it's a little bit funny, but it's also, that's a real fear that they have, that you're infected and you may infect them and kill them. That's a real fear that some people have. And, you know, some people have anxiety anyway about their health. Can you imagine what it's like to have anxiety about your health anyway and then a pandemic to hit? It must be really, really stifling. So yeah, I think that there does definitely need to be some mental health advocates coming along online, on stream. There definitely needs to be workshops and help, and the HSE will need to be rolling out messages to people about their mental health,
you know? Yeah. Laura, thank you so much. I have really enjoyed that. I got so much out of it. Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome. It's been lovely to be here.
Thank you for listening to The Good Glow Health, with thanks to RecroMed. If you did enjoy this episode, please leave me a review. I'll talk to you very soon.